Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 277. Today is Monday, April 16, 2012. Well, the saga is over. We are officially off the market. We're not moving. We're not buying. We're not selling. We're not doing nothing. As it happens, on Friday, I was gearing up. Well, actually, Thursday, I suppose. I was setting up. But on Friday, I was going to do a podcast, and I actually started recording one. I got partway through it, and then all of a sudden I said to myself, I said, expletive, I'm not doing this, and stopped. And the reason, and it's a good thing I did, too, because I was in a really foul mood. And the reason is because we had a second offer that had fallen over again because of building inspection. Now, the first one had a whole bunch of minor things and also a couple of areas where there was moisture. And we hired contractors to deal with all of these things, and it took the better part of 3 weeks, but we finally got back on the market. And a few days after that, we had another offer. Again, conditional on finance and builder's report and, oh, and in this case, also selling of a home. And we were both kind of underwhelmed by it. We weren't excited because we'd already been through this once and hadn't gone anywhere, and we weren't optimistic that this one would either, just because of what we'd been through. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. The inspector came through on Wednesday, which was a nice sunny day, basically. And he admitted to me that he was not familiar with the cornerstone construction technique that's used in this house. I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes for this episode if you can, I don't know, deal with the virtually unnavigable website. There's a lot of information about the construction technique. But he wasn't familiar with it. He expressed skepticism about it. And as he was leaving, I said to him, is there anything that we should be worried about? And he said, well, there's still water in that one place in the corner of the garage. And Sonny, I think, is about to bark in a minute, so just be warned. Anyway, and which told me that he had seen the previous report, which is actually understandable because, or was aware of it anyway, because we had to provide a copy of that to the person who did put an offer on the house. And he went away, and we didn't hear anything. And then the next day, we heard that he found a significant issue with the roof, although we didn't know what specifically, because this was third hand. And this is brand new. This is completely out of left field, actually a bit like the first report was. And then we waited a couple of days, and then we finally heard on Friday that, in fact, the deal had fallen over, as we expected. And so then we said, that's it, we're done, we're off the market. And we did get a copy of the report, though, finally, and this time we didn't have to pay for it. And we read through it, and it was evident from the report that the guy was extremely prejudiced against the cornerstone system, that he didn't really trust it. He didn't really think it was a reliable system for some reason. I don't know why, but, you know, they get these ideas in their heads, and there's not much you can do about it. But he mentioned the moisture in the front, which, yeah, we know about that, and I'll come back to that in a minute. But he also talked about the parapets. Now, the parapets are basically the end walls. The house is kind of a T-shape, more or less, and the end walls have parapets. Well, that's not entirely true. It's more like an L-shape, and the two end walls, and then there's a little teeny wall in the middle of the house that it doesn't actually extend up. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's what they are. And the roof goes into them. It's just a flat wall that faces out. And he expressed concern about these and the junction with the roof, and he said that water was leaking in, even though there was no evidence of that from the moisture survey. But then, nevertheless, that's what he said. And he said that he'd talked to some builders, and that if it was to fail, it would be very difficult to repair that kind of a house, this kind of a house. Well, it sounds like he sought out builders who would reinforce his prejudices, because if he talked to somebody who actually built a cornerstone home, he would have found out that it's not difficult to repair at all. However, well, I'll get to the however in a minute. So it was based on all of that the bank refused to extend a mortgage and the deal fell over. And, you know, fair enough, if I had been the bank and I read this report, I would have been freaked out too if I didn't know better. But because I do know better, I wouldn't have been worried. But, you know, what can you do? What's done is done. So that afternoon, he left, I guess about 3 o'clock or so on Wednesday, and it started to rain. It rained rather hard. And what do you suppose happened? Water came under the wall of the front of the garage. Now, you might recall that we had a new slit drain put in. We had the plaster was cut and lifted up so it wasn't touching the concrete anymore. And all the things that the experts told us to do, we did. And it ended up making matters worse. So the next day, Thursday this is now, I met with a contractor who builds cornerstone homes and who actually worked on this house 10 years ago, because it occurred to us that none of the inspectors who've been through know anything about cornerstone construction. And the two who actually made recommendations on what to do were making recommendations that were appropriate for a timber-style house, but not necessarily for a cornerstone house. So we brought him in to advise, and he's going to figure out a way to repair the repairs to make it... Oh, there's Sunny. I knew she's going to bark sooner or later, because Jake's outside barking, to make it appropriate for this style house. And now that we've seen this report, we'll also have him check out the parapets to make sure they are okay for now. Long term, I don't know. We might end up remodeling the house in a few years' time, taking off all the plaster and changing it to weatherboards or something more conventional, which would mean redoing the design of the house as well, because the parapets wouldn't work with weatherboards, I don't think. But we'll see. I don't know exactly what we're going to do about all of that. That's an expensive proposition to redesign the outside, but it does give us a chance to update the look, because the house is 10 years old now, and we're probably talking about at least another 5 years before we would get to it. So, you know, it's starting to need a jolly good tart-up by that point, so it might be time to do that. I don't know. But the thing that we're up against is two things. First of all, as I said, nobody understands the cornerstone construction technique, and so they don't really get that there's no timber in the walls to rot, and it can't have the problems that leaky homes have. The other thing is there's plaster cladding on the outside of the house, and they all think that plaster cladding will leak, and they all think that plaster cladding means a leaky home. And there's nothing you can do about that. There's this paranoid hysteria that is running through New Zealand because of the leaky home crisis. And granted, there are a lot of leaky homes, and it's costing a lot of money to sort out. Nobody's denying that, but that doesn't mean that all plaster houses are or could be leaky. So we're up against two prejudices, one against the construction technique and the other against the fact that it's got plaster on the outside of the house. The only solution, we can't rebuild the house, obviously, so the only other solution is to remove the plaster and put on conventional cladding at some stage. But as I said, that will require a major remodel, because the style of the house won't work without the plaster, I don't think. So I don't know. We'll have to think about this kind of hard, long and hard, to figure out what we're going to do. But this isn't going to be a quick or easy solution, no matter what we do. But in the meantime... we're going to have this contractor make sure that everything's secure for now. But in the meantime, what we're doing is, at the moment, we're doing some small things that will just make the house more livable for us. Because the reason we were moving wasn't that we disliked this house, and it wasn't that we didn't like the area or whatever. It's just that it wasn't meeting our needs, and it wasn't going to meet our needs, the needs that we anticipate in a few years ahead. So right now, we're concentrating on these small things, a lot of things that most people would never even notice, but are things that when you live in a house for a long time that really bug you, you know, those kinds of things. For instance, there's a room in the house that has two doors. We use it as a guest room. And originally, when it was designed, it only had one door, and the light switches by that one, the original door. But when the house was being built, the first owners had a second door added, but there's no light switch by that second door. So you've got to walk all the way around or through the room to get to the light switch, which is annoying. So we're having a second light switch put in. Things like that that are really unimportant, very minor, but it's going to make the house better for us, and it's going to make us enjoy the house more. And most of the things that we're doing are terribly inexpensive, or very inexpensive, as the case may be. I'm continuing on with my wardrobe project, where I was months ago when we were starting all of this. I've already taken out the shelf in the guest room, and I bought the system to put in there. The electrician has to access the wardrobe to be able to put the new light switch in that room. But I've got that ready, and I've got the shelving stuff to put in our linen cupboard, which, of course, if you've been paying attention, was originally the hot water cupboard in the house. That's where the hot water cylinder was. Ooh, pardon me. And so that's going to add a lot more shelves to there, which, of course, is all about adding storage to this house. Now, we've already started thinking about how we can add storage under the house, because it's a very large, dry area. we thought we might as well exploit that to add some storage somehow. But we haven't gotten very far along those tracks yet because, well, quite frankly, we're still kind of getting used to the idea that we're not going to be able to move. Overall, I think we're okay. We're okay with the fact that we're not moving because, as I said, it was never that we disliked this house. But I think both of us would be happier if we had reached this decision because it's what we chose rather than having it forced upon us. If we had looked at the market and said, oh, we don't really like any of these houses that are on offer. Our house is better than any of these. Let's just stay here. That would have been different. That would have been fine. But we went through all of this work, all of this stress, all of this heartache, in my case, literal pain, and all for nothing in the end because we emerged from it spending thousands of dollars on various things, you know, the marketing fees for the real estate, lawyers' fees, two sets of consultants, at least three contractors and counting, and all these other things, all to try to sell the house. And ultimately, it didn't work. None of it was of any use. Now, you could argue that ultimately we'll end up with a better house because of it. And to a certain extent, that's true. Although we wouldn't have spent as much money, certainly, on all this stuff if we hadn't moving. Now, I'm not counting the painting in that, by the way, because we had planned on that originally anyway, because the house hadn't been painted in 10 years. It was time. But that's not even counting that. You know, all this stuff is on top of those things. So it's disappointing. It's obviously discouraging the way things worked out. I was really depressed last week because I was waiting for that second shoe to fall. I knew it was going to fall over. I had a gut feeling that it wasn't going to work out either, and I was just waiting for it to happen and waiting and waiting, and it just was the waiting as much as anything was what was getting to me. Now, I'd already said that in the first part of this journey, when I was doing all the physical work to try to get the house ready to go on the market, it was the hardest amount of physical labor I'd ever done in a short period of time in my life. And I still think that that's true. But after that, it became more emotional and stressful or stress related because, you know, you always had to keep the house spotless just in case somebody comes to visit, except during the 3 weeks when we were off the market. But even there, we're dealing with the stress of trying to get all of the work done as quickly as possible and correctly so that it could satisfy the conditions of the report and all that, all this sort of stuff that ended up being pointless in the end. But because we didn't know that. Now, I said that I had physical pain as well. And that's because when the week that we actually officially started marketing, the house went on the internet, the sign went up, and we got our first offer that week. I came down with a gout attack, one of the worst I've had, actually, or at least in a very long time. And in one form or another, that continued ever since. I never was without pain all that time, but sometimes it was worse than others. A lot of times it just was more like an ache than a pain, and I felt crappy because, as I've said before, when you have a gout attack, very often you feel you've got flu-like symptoms. So I felt really bad for most of those weeks. And so It was an unpleasant time physically for me as well as emotionally and all this other stuff. Well, the deal fell over Friday. We had a normal takeaway night with Nigel's sister and went to bed actually a little bit early, to be honest. I mean, I normally stay up at least midnight on a Friday night, but I think I was in bed by 10 because I was tired. And after all of that, and I woke up early in the morning because I had to go to the loo. And I realized that there was no pain in my foot. I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I went off, came back and went to bed. And when I got up for the day, about an hour and a half later, there was still no pain, and there's been no pain since. It was almost as if once the story was finally over, once the actual cause of my gout attack and the cause of my pain was gone, the attack and the pain went with it. Now, I don't believe in anything supernatural or spiritual or anything like that, so I'm not going to go into some sort of metaphysical explanation for what happened. Although I do adore coincidences when they happen. I think they're really cool. But I do seriously think that my body knew that the ordeal, the cause of the ordeal was over and I was already starting to move ahead. And as I said, that's what we've been doing. I spent today getting one wardrobe ready. Well, actually, two wardrobes ready for the electrician, and it's just a question of whether or not I don't know, I suppose what we do after that. And the next big thing, we'll be bringing back the storage unit. You might remember the trailer came to us, we filled it up and sent it away, and now we're going to have them bring it back, and we'll empty it out, and they'll take the trailer away again. But it's a question of when we do that. They charge from the beginning of the month, and in my perfect world, they'd bring it the last weekend in April, but that's also, I think we've got a family thing that weekend, and also that's right before my big work project for the month of May. So we might want to wait until later in May, and which actually gives us a little bit more time to get ready for it and decide some more things about what we're going to do. I'm in the process of reorganizing my office. I'm going to sell my massive desk. I say it's massive because it's 1,800 on a side. It's a corner desk, and it completely dominates my room. And I'm going to buy something smaller and that fits the space better. And I would like to get all of that sorted before the storage unit gets back, because some of the things that used to be in other rooms are going to come into my office, and basically shifting things around. You know, basically taking advantage of the change in order to kind of rejig things. But we like the emptiness, for lack of a better word, of the house since we shifted all that stuff out, and we really don't want to put everything all back. Now, some of the stuff we could probably just get rid of altogether, truth be known, but we won't know that until it gets back, because we don't remember everything that's in storage. But I don't know. We'll see what that is. Now, of course, all of this begs the question, since we are no longer moving, does that mean we're going to be able to go to Las Vegas? And the short answer is, I don't know. But the more extensive short answer is almost certainly not, in my opinion. And the reason is because we've spent all of this money on this ill-fated adventure. If we had sold, we would have been able to recoup all of that money. And we would have had some to spare, even with the moving expenses, because we would have seen to it that we did. But because we're not moving now, all of that money is lost. It's flushed down the toilet. And I think when all the bills are in, it probably would have been enough. It would have been enough to more than pay for our tickets to the U.S., probably all of our travel expenses in the U.S., not necessarily a combination of the rest of it, but certainly a good chunk of what that would have cost us is now just flushed down the toilet because of this misadventure. So because of that, I think it's highly improbable that we will be going to Las Vegas this year. Whereas before, I thought it was improbable, but I actually had significant hope because I still thought we could sell. But now that that's clear that that's not going to happen, I have very little hope that we're actually going to be able to go this year. And we'll know for sure in the next few weeks as we kind of, you know, sort out our thinking and figure out what it is exactly we're going to do to the house, because we may have to spend some more things just to get to the point where we're, you know, at our new stasis level or whatever you want to call it. But I think in a way, and I call this episode Forward to the Past, which is kind of a play on Back to the Future, if you didn't work that out. Because in a way, what we're doing is we're getting back to where we were in the first place before this whole thing began, this whole, what did you call it? Dream, misadventure, whatever, before all of that started. And that means, in my case, hopefully it means that I can reconnect with my blogging buddies and my podcasting pals, because I've been really out of the loop for a long time now. I'd like to be able to blog regularly and podcast regularly again. And I also want to be able to do videos as I planned on doing this year, but before I got so wrapped up in all of the work and things that I had to do related to this house. And I also wanted, as I've said repeatedly, I want to have guests on my podcast. And now that I'm not going to be dragged down by the house so much anymore, I should be able to actually make that happen. I was looking forward to that happening in a new home, of course, but, you know, things don't always work out the way you plan or want or expect or what have you. But we're actually both okay about it. I think we both would have preferred to have made this choice ourselves, but, you know, things, as I just said, things don't always work out the way you plan. So that's the way it goes. So now I have a voicemail message, actually. And it's from our friend, Bank.
Oh, hi, Arthur. It's Bank here in Santa Fe. I'm so glad to have you back on my iTunes list of podcasts. And I'm very sorry to hear that you're getting to be collateral damage in the Leaky Homes scandal. I hope that all gets resolved soon. We're not much going on here. We're getting ready for our annual pilgrimage back to the mother country this summer. And if for some reason you fancy a trip to Dunedin in July, and why wouldn't you, we would love to see you. So looking forward to the next podcast, and take care. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for that, Bank. And collateral damage is a really good way of putting that. That's exactly what we are, because we're not a leaky home in any manner, shape, or form, but we are tarred and feathered as if we are. Were, are, whatever. I don't know that we're going to make it to Dunedin in July, I got to be honest. We do have a trip to Wellington that's way overdue. We've got lots of friends and acquaintances in that area. Well, probably more acquaintances than friends, but nevertheless, we have a trip to Wellington to make as well. And we'll see how things go. But you never know. We might make it down there yet. You just don't know. But that is it for today. I thought about doing some more regular stuff, some, you know, things from the news and blah de blah de blah. But quite frankly, I'm just not into it yet. This is the first Monday after the deal fell over, so I'm just beginning to get back into the swing of things, and so probably, you know, as the week goes on and the months go on and so on, things will get better. But for now, that's it. I will talk to you soon. If I don't talk to you again this week, have a great rest of the week. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Airman's Podcast at airmanspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at airmanspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.